Welcome back and Happy New Year! We're celebrating a brand new year by bringing you episode 33 of Pilcrow and Daggers, The Shorts. My name is Amory Silver, and I'll be joining you today as we listen to Don't Be Afraid, Just Once in a Lifetime by Aaron Lawrence. So here's some fun trivia for you. Did you know that Don't Be Afraid, Just Once in a Lifetime is not only the title of today's story, but also lyrics from a song written by a German synth-pop band? The name of the song is Once in a Lifetime, and according to Wikipedia, it was released as a single in 1996. The name of the band that performed it is Wolfsheim. So here's why I suck just a little. Aaron Lawrence, author of this episode's podcast, wrote a few lyrics for that song in a scene. I chose not to sing those lyrics today. You're all very welcome. And on that note, just reading the lyrics out loud didn't sound right either, so I just left them out altogether of that particular scene. However, I did embed the YouTube video for this song on the podcast page of our website. The address is pilcrowdagger.com/podcasts. And I encourage all of you to take a few minutes, 3 minutes and 43 seconds to be exact, according to YouTube, to listen to the song. I also encourage you to read the story while you're listening to the song. Single copies of the magazine can be purchased from our website at pilcrowdagger.com/shop. You can also purchase an annual subscription from that page as well. If you're not familiar with our magazine, not only do we publish short stories, essays, and poems, but we also take the time to interview authors, most of whom are self-published in each issue, doing our best to help support them and their literary works. And that concludes this extremely cheap promotional plug. I have one more announcement before we continue with this podcast production, and that is, submissions for the February issue are now closed. We are currently accepting submissions for the April issue. The theme for this issue is the home reno. Have you ever dreamed of becoming a house flipper? Have you ever discovered any secret rooms? Did all that banging and drilling unleash anything paranormal? Tell us all about your home reno experiences. The deadline for this issue is February 24th, 2019. And now I proudly present Don't Be Afraid, Just Once in a Lifetime by Aaron Lawrence. Asmir Mikhailovich walked into the chamber, and a swirl of snow followed him in. It had been snowing all day, and the roads were thick with it. He left his coat on in the poorly built nightclub. The frigid temperature snuck through his heavy pea coat and chilled him anyway. The door opened behind him, and he heard the shuffle of feet. Turning around, he withheld a sigh as a man bundled in layers of clothes walked up to him. The man wore a hoodie underneath his layers of coats, and he had the hood pulled up so it obscured his face. "Hey!" Esmir could barely hear him over the music. "Hey, Jimmy!" Esmir's Ukrainian accent was thick. "Want a drink?" "Yeah," was Jimmy's muted reply. Esmir took off his gloves and headed to the bar, Jimmy in tow. From what he had been able to figure out, Jimmy was homeless and addicted to meth. Well, he was pretty sure Jimmy was on meth. His face was red and acne-riddled like a meth user, and he was not in touch with reality most times. It also seemed likely that Jimmy was mentally ill. It would be so easy to ignore Jimmy and go about his own business. But Esmir remembered too well what it had been like to live in the Soviet Union before Ukraine had gained its freedom. His family often had gone hungry because of the lines that had stretched on for hours at the food distribution centers. Even on days when they had gotten food, Esmir and his siblings still hadn't eaten much. The thought of Jimmy being cold and hungry reminded him of those days, and Esmir couldn't turn a blind eye on Jimmy because of it. Esmir leaned against the bar, where Kat, the owner, was working. She saw him and automatically went and got a Heineken. "Hey, Esmir," she said, raising her voice over the music. "Tab?" "Yeah. What do you want, Jimmy?" Jimmy started as Esmir opened his wallet for a credit card. "Vodka on the rocks." "You got it." Kat took Esmir's card and prepared Jimmy's drink with quick motions. "You're one of the few who took on the roads tonight." She set Jimmy's glass down. Jimmy grabbed it greedily and started to drink. "I know. It's still snowing pretty hard." "Well, DJ DVD8 managed to come in tonight. If he hadn't, we would have closed." Jimmy set his glass on the counter. It was empty except for some ice cubes. Can I get another? Esmer nodded to Kat. How about a juice too, Jimmy? Maybe get something healthy into him, he thought. Sure. Orange juice. And a bag of potato chips, please. Kat nodded and picked up a second glass. Esmer took his beer and said to Jimmy, I'm going to talk to the DJ. He carried his beer through a dark area of benches and tables, all empty, and went down a short hallway to the DJ booth. DJ DVD-8 was dancing in his booth, headsets up to his ears. Esmer, hey man! He set the headsets down and leaned on the edge. What can I do you for? Hey, can you play some Wolfsheim tonight? The DJ nodded and slapped his hand on the ledge. You got it, my friend. It's so dead, you could name songs for an hour and I would play them. They engaged in chit-chat for a few minutes, mostly about their favorite musicians, before Esmer headed back to the bar and saw Jimmy sitting at the far end. As he walked over, he noticed Jimmy's vodka was empty again, and the glass of juice was barely touched. Esmer sighed to himself and sat his half-empty beer down. I'm going to dance, Jimmy. Are you cool? Yeah, I'm cool. The dance floor was right beside them, with a checkerboard floor and mirrored wall. A small group of people were clustered on the opposite side of the dance floor. They were all regulars, and Esmer saw them most nights that he came to the club. Sometimes they talked with him, but he had never been absorbed by their group. They were nice people, though. Esmer just wasn't the social type. Never had been. Perhaps it was his upbringing. Esmer nodded in their direction. One girl, Chris, saw and raised her hand in a wave. Esmer danced his way through several songs, and then Wolfsheim's Once in a Lifetime came over the speakers. Esmer couldn't help but grin. DVD-8 knew it was his favorite. He danced even harder, letting the music pour over him. If he had been home alone, he would have sung aloud, off-key, with his heavy accent. Instead, he mouthed the chorus lyrics. The song ended, and he realized that he was growing hot with his coat on. He left the dance floor and returned to his beer and Jimmy. Unbuttoning his peacoat, he took his seat. He picked up his beer and realized it was now empty. Cursing Jimmy internally, he flagged down Kat. Need a new beer? Kat asked as she walked up to them. Yeah, please. Can I get another vodka? Jimmy asked Esmer. Esmer gave him a concerned look. You're taking it very fast tonight. How about another juice first? All right, man, all right. Jimmy picked up the glass of orange juice and finished it. He brought up a reddened hand and scratched his face. Thanks for the drinks. You wouldn't have a couple bucks on you, would you? I haven't had anything to eat all day except those chips you bought. I just need a couple bucks to get a burger or something. It occurred to Esmer that there were probably no burger joints open this late, especially with the weather as bad as it was. He wouldn't mind buying Jimmy food, but giving Jimmy actual money would probably be like buying him drugs outright. I don't have any cash, he lied. But I have a spare pair of gloves in the car. You don't have any? No, I don't. Thanks, man. You sure you don't have any money? Yeah, sorry. I paid Kat with a credit card. Kat set down their drinks, and Jimmy rather reluctantly picked up his orange juice and began sipping at it. They sat in silence for a while. Finally, Esmer tried to start a conversation. Sometimes Jimmy would talk, other times he would grow sullen and withdraw. Esmer never could tell which way Jimmy would respond. How are you doing, Jimmy? Okay, I'm pretty good. Jimmy licked orange juice off his lip. I've been staying at a shelter, you know, the Catholic Charities one on Madison. They're pretty good. It's warm. They don't have a curfew, do they? Nope. Sometimes I hear people tell me not to go in, but it was so cold with the snow that I just ignored them. They lie sometimes, you know. Jimmy swallowed a gulp of his juice. Sure. Esmer was cautious. He knew he was on fragile ground. How's your juice? Good. Almost done. Jimmy held up the glass for him to see. Watching him drink the rest, Esmer asked, Do you want to go get those gloves now? Yeah. Esmer slipped off his stool and buttoned his coat. He saw that Chris's group had left the dance floor and commandeered a booth. There were only four of them tonight sitting at the booth they always seemed to occupy. He put his gloves back on and led Jimmy out of the club. A gust of wind and snow hit them in their faces as Esmer opened the door. It was still coming down pretty heavily. Esmer judged that there were at least 3 more inches on the ground than when he came in. His car was parked at the side. He could see how much snow had started to build up on it. He led Jimmy to the beat-up 1979 Buick and fished his keys out of his pocket. Unlocking the driver's side door, Esmer reached inside and groped around on the bench seat for that extra pair of gloves. It was dark out, and the dome light of the Buick was burnt out. Finally, he grabbed them. Turning around, Esmer saw that Jimmy was right in front of him, with something shiny in his hand. Jimmy, what? There was a strange feeling in his abdomen. It was sharp, and then pressure, and then sharp again as the pressure left. He heard himself make a barely audible ugh as it happened again. By the third time, Esmer figured out that Jimmy was stabbing him. Fear washed over him as he felt warmth running down his stomach and the front of his pants. He tried to grapple with Jimmy for the knife, dropping the gloves, but Jimmy was too fast for him. Jimmy stabbed Esmer in the chest, and Esmer heard metal scraping on bone. Something must be wrong, because he was suddenly having trouble breathing. Esmer could feel his heart pound frantically, and he made another futile swipe at the knife. Jimmy stepped back, and Esmer grabbed the car door for support. He felt like he was leaking, soaking himself. He wondered if this was what a glass felt like when it is emptied. He was pouring out and he couldn't stop. Every moment he was getting weaker. Jimmy! Esmer tried to take a breath and heard a whistling noise. It was getting darker somehow, coming in from the edges of his vision. His grip on the car door loosened and he went down on one knee. In front of him, Jimmy was putting on the pair of gloves. Esmer could see blood on the snow. Blood. That's my blood. I'm bleeding, he thought faintly. He tried to get up, and only wound up falling back, now on both knees. Jimmy pushed him, and Esmer fell back into the snow. Jimmy slammed the car door shut, and then Esmer felt Jimmy's hand reach underneath him, and his wallet being fished out of his pocket. Esmer wanted to beg for help, but he couldn't remember the English words. He muttered it in Ukrainian, but Jimmy ignored him. Now that he had Esmer's wallet, Jimmy straightened Esmer out, legs together, arms at his sides. Esmer could hear blood dripping onto the snowy pavement as it ran down his side. He tried to raise his hand and push on the bleeding wounds. But oh, it hurt, it hurt. He heard himself moan and closed his eyes. Jimmy was pushing him now, pushing him through the snow. When Jimmy stopped pushing, Esmer managed to force his eyes open. Car parts. He saw car parts. At least, that's what he thought he saw. His vision was still darkening. He tried to move to the left or the right and found it impossible. His head was light, and he thought he heard footsteps running away. Esmer closed his eyes. He thought of his mother. He thought of warmth. He thought of his cat. He thought he needed help. He thought of his favorite song. He thought he needed to get to the people inside the club. He thought, help me. The sounds got lost in the ocean filling Esmer's ears. He felt himself sinking. There was pressure on his abdomen, and it was pain, and it was pushing him down farther. Faintly, he heard a siren, then nothing. Wynn returned to the group. They talked and joked until most of their drinks were finished. When they got up to dance, she danced with Kevin and marveled at the ease with which they danced together, having only known each other a few days. They danced together for a long time, with Elijah and Chris to their left. Dancing with Kevin reminded her of their lovemaking, the rhythm and their bodies moving in sync. She didn't notice Esmer leave the dance floor, leaving her and her friends the only dancers out there. Instead of relaxing, she found herself overwhelmed by the lyrics. She stopped dancing and put her hand on Kevin's chest. I need to stop for a minute, she said, brushing her dyed blue hair off her forehead. Are you okay? He looked concerned. She nodded. I'm just hot. Want some company? Sure. She stood on her tiptoes and gave him a kiss. Can we sit for a minute? She left the dance floor with Kevin, and Chris and Elijah followed. The conversation picked back up. Cigarettes were lit, but Wynn couldn't shake the nervous feeling in her chest. She finished her drink, hoping it would steady her, before excusing herself and heading out into the frigid weather. She was walking down the snow-covered ramp toward the back parking lot when she slipped and fell on her behind. Damn it, she muttered and looked up. The empty north parking lot looked like a field of untouched snow, and as she marveled at the beautiful expanse, she heard footsteps running away. Suddenly scared, her voice was trapped in her throat. She rolled over onto her knees and tried to speak, but nothing came out. She wobbled to her feet and tried again. Hello? She said in almost a whisper. Hello? A little louder that time. Hello? She heard a moan. It came from the side parking lot to her left, where Kevin had parked. Hello? Her voice was loud now. She trudged to the parking lot, trying to stick to previously made tracks. Another groan, and it sounded like it was coming from underneath a car. She ducked down low and looked underneath the cars as she walked. Is anyone there? It was underneath a battered old car that she saw feet. She rushed to the side of the car and got down on her hands and knees. She could see a man on his back. Are you okay? She asked and got no response. She reached in to shake him, and her hand touched wetness. She pulled her hand back and saw blood on her fingers. Oh no, oh no, oh no. She reached under the car again and grabbed the man's arm. She tried to pull him out, but he was too heavy. Shit! Oh, what do I do? She pulled on his arm again. Help! She yelled as loud as she could. Somebody help! She tugged so hard on the man's arm that she fell on her behind again. Somebody help me, please! She struggled to her feet, ready to go inside the club and get help, when she heard the door of the club slam open and the sound of booted feet. When? Over here, she called. It was Chris, Kevin, and Elijah. There's a man under this car, and he's bleeding. I think he's unconscious. Wynn got out of their way so they could look under the car themselves. I'll get him by the arm, you grab his leg, Elijah said to Kevin. They got into position and hauled the man out. Oh, Wynn gasped. It's Esmir. Esmir lay in front of them, his stomach and chest covered in blood. The blood on his chest was mostly dry. It was clear the wounds in his abdomen were the serious ones. Kevin fished his phone from his pocket. He dialed and almost immediately began talking to 911. Chris stepped up, unwinding her scarf from around her neck. Here, she gave it to Elijah. Put pressure on his wound. Elijah did as she instructed and pressed the scarf into Esmir's abdomen. Chris checked Esmir's pulse and said with relief, He's just unconscious. Police and ambulance are on their way, Kevin said. Those few minutes that they waited for the police and the EMS seemed to take forever to Wynn. In the meantime, everyone from inside had now come out into the parking lot, watching over Esmir and wondering what could have happened to him. Wynn looked amongst the little crowd. Kevin, where's the guy that was sitting with Esmir? Kevin frowned. I don't know. The last time I saw him, they were sitting at the bar. Sirens approached from the distance. Within moments, police cars and an ambulance were pulling into the driveway. Wynn looked down on Esmir's still face and breathed a sigh of relief. Yellow, red, and blue lights flashed everywhere, illuminating the parking lot. Police poured out of their cars and came over to the small group. One officer came by Esmir's feet and shined a flashlight toward Esmir's face. Elijah squinted up into the light, still holding pressure on Esmir's wounds. He's bleeding pretty badly, and he's unconscious. He has a pulse. I've got pressure on the bleeding. Do you know his name? The officer asked. Esmir. Last name? Mikhailovich. It was Kat who spoke up. Two EMTs came to Esmir's side, wheeling a gurney. Waving Elijah away, they pulled an orange backboard off of the gurney and got Esmir off the ground and onto the gurney. They strapped him in and wheeled him in the direction of the ambulance. I'm Lieutenant Stratton. Does anyone know what happened here? Stepping forward as he spoke, this man appeared to be the lead officer. The other officers busied themselves with taking photographs and hanging police tape. I found him. Wynn felt nervous. She was not used to dealing with authority figures like the police. She rushed through the story. The lieutenant made notes on a little flip pad. And your name is? Wynn. He looked at her as if he was waiting for something. Oh, Hovey. Wynn Hovey. Can I see some ID? She dug in her pocket for it and passed it to him. Stratton quickly handed it back, making notes, and then took Kevin and everyone else's names, contact information, and ID. Wynn shifted uncomfortably from foot to foot. She wanted to know how Esmir was doing. Had they stopped the bleeding? While she was wondering, a siren began to wail as the ambulance left. She turned and watched the red and yellow lights fade into the distance. When they were out of sight, she turned back to the scene at hand. Wynn suddenly poked Kevin in the ribs. Tell him about that guy. Oh, yeah. Officer, there was a guy sitting with Esmir at the bar, but he's not here now. I don't think any of us really know him. We haven't seen him since Wynn found Esmir. Can you give me a description? Stratton asked. I can, Kat said. I've served him lots of times. I made his drinks, and Esmir put them on his tab. She cleared her throat. He was pale, lanky brown hair, kind of greasy, brown or dark eyes, and acne scars. All of his coats were dark colors, and his clothes were baggy. He was about medium height and skinny. Oh, good. Thank you. Lieutenant Stratton turned and pointed to the car Esmir had been under. Does anyone know whose car this is? Kat spoke up again. It's Esmir's. I saw him pull up in it one night a few months ago. Wynn whispered to Kevin. When do you think we can go? I want to see Esmir and see if he's okay. I don't know. When he tells us we can go, I guess, Kevin whispered back. Wynn sighed in agitation and settled back on her heels. She began to reach for Kevin's hand and saw motion to her right. She turned and saw that it was the man that had been sitting with Esmir. He was shuffling his feet, slowly approaching the group. His hoodie was up, shading his face. His hands were in his pockets, and he moved at a slow, creepy pace. That's him! She burst out. Kevin followed her line of sight. Officer, that's the man we told you about. Jimmy continued to shuffle in their direction. Sir, Stratton stepped forward. May I see some ID? Jimmy did not reach for any ID, but continued forward with his hands in his pockets. Sir, I'm going to have to ask you for some identification. Jimmy wobbled to a stop, dug around in his pocket, and produced a wallet. He held it out to Stratton. Stratton took it and opened it. He stared at the contents for a long moment. Where did you get this? He asked slowly. Jimmy giggled and brought his hands to his mouth. He giggled again and shrugged his shoulders. That's it. You're under arrest. Stratton grabbed him and spun him around. Jimmy continued to giggle as Stratton put handcuffs on him. The crowd watched in confusion. Elijah asked the question that was on everyone's mind. What's going on? Stratton started to lead Jimmy to a police car. He just gave me Esmir Mikhailovich's wallet, complete with Mr. Mikhailovich's ID. He leaned Jimmy against a car and patted him down. Everyone watched as Stratton reached into the pocket of Jimmy's cargo pants and then pulled his hand back. Blood stood out on the tips of Stratton's fingers. He looked over his shoulder at the crowd. I think you folks can go. Wynn's group formed a little huddle away from the police. A quick conference, and they all agreed they wanted to see Esmir and make sure he was all right. They dispersed to their cars and made a careful drive to Metro Hospital. The snow was thick, and the roads were still treacherous. At the hospital, they learned Esmir was in surgery, but the admissions attendant gave them a room number. Kevin sat in the only comfortable-looking chair in the room and gestured for Wynn to sit on his lap. She did, and slumped down so she could rest her head on the curve of his neck and shoulder. He wrapped his arms around her waist, kissed the top of her head, and sighed. Elijah leaned up against the wall, and Chris leaned against him. No one made conversation. Esmir cracked his eyes open to the bright light, and he immediately felt dizzy. He closed them again in self-defense. Slowly, he started to take an inventory. Soft voices were in front of him. He was warm. He was no longer leaking, and there seemed to be some sort of cloth over those wounds. Same with his chest, and he could breathe without trouble. The pain seemed to be held at bay. He could sense it. But it was behind a fuzzy wall. Knowing it was there was merely intellectual. He opened his eyes again. This time, the light was not so bad. He saw a ceiling, and there was something stuck in his arm. He managed to look over and saw an IV bag hanging from a pole. Hospital. I'm in a hospital. Thank God, he wondered with distant amazement. He was too relieved to consider how that had even happened. Hey, Esmir, you're awake, a female voice said. How are you feeling? Okay, he croaked out, his accent unusually and uncontrollably thick. It occurred to him that along with everything else, he was very thirsty. Esmir, he heard a second female voice. In the room with him were the four regulars from the chamber. Chris, the pretty blonde that had waved to him tonight, was there, along with her heavily tattooed beau, Elijah. Esmir recognized the long-haired man as Kevin, and his girlfriend with the dyed blue hair, and had some odd name that started with a W, or maybe it was a V. Hey, he slurred. I must be on a lot of drugs, he thought vaguely. Man, you don't know how relieved we are to see you. You were in bad shape, Kevin said. Thank God Wynne found you when she did. You found me? The strangely named girl piped up. I came outside to get some air, and I heard moaning and footsteps running away. I looked around and didn't see anything, so I started looking under the cars. I don't know why, but that's when I saw you. I yelled for help, and everyone came outside. Chris nodded. It was scary. We could hear her yelling over the music. Esmer could only hear parts of what they were saying. His mind was too foggy to focus. It was clear enough, though, that Wynne saved his life. He could have bled to death if she hadn't found him. They even caught the guy who did it, Kevin continued. He came back and for some reason gave the police your wallet when he was asked for ID. He also had the knife in his pocket. He must be crazy high or something. Jimmy, I was only trying to help you, you poor, unstable bastard. You saved me, he said. Yes, I'm so glad I found you, Wynne said. It scares me to think what would have happened if I hadn't gone outside when I did. I would have died. Thank you, he told her. Thank you. She smiled at him, and he felt an overwhelming sleepiness. His eyes fluttered, and he yawned. You're more than welcome. We should let you rest, Wynne said. She wiped her eyes, and he saw that she was crying. I'm glad you're okay. We'll come visit you later. Thank you, he said again, before he began to drift into the safety of sleep. Nothing would happen to him now, thanks to these people. It didn't matter that there would be weeks of healing, pain, and blue pills that would ease the pain and make him sleep for hours. All that mattered was sleep. And finally, a safe darkness took him. That concludes episode 33 of Pilcrow and Daggers the Shorts. My name is Amory Silver, and I hope you enjoyed the podcast production of Don't Be Afraid, Just Once in a Lifetime by Aaron Lawrence. Special thanks to Kevin MacLeod for letting us use his music, Happy Boy End Theme, Serpentine Trek, and Perspectives. All of Kevin's music is licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 and can be found on his website at incompetech.com. All other sound effects are courtesy of the various artists at freesound.org. Thank you again for joining us. We'll see you next time.